Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people, authors, speakers, anybody that I think has a great tale to tell, who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and actionable advice with us each week. And today I welcome to the show Rebecca Carpenter. And Rebecca is the president of AV Productions and travels throughout the country as a keynote speaker, a leadership development trainer, author, and performing artist. So for over 20 years, Rebecca has created and facilitated keynote presentations, seminars, and workshops for corporate, business, educational, nonprofit, religious, spiritual, personal, and professional development events and conferences. I'm tired. I'm already exhausted just reading this. And I have to tell you, I've been reading, she's laughing at me, I have been reading her new book. Her publisher sent me this book, Awakening, 12 Tools to Unlock Ultimate Potential. And I have to tell you, it's a good book. I've got it on my desk. We're going to be talking about some of it. We're going to be talking about a lot of things. But as Rebecca says, we need to be as awake as possible right now. Now is the time in our history for us to awaken and come together as a community to take back our national and global integrity. We're going to talk about that too because I can't agree more. Now is the time in our history for us to awaken and step out of our man-made dramas that distract us from living in the present, from being able to question and critically think, from owning and stepping into our authentic greatness, and from designing our lives based on who we really are. Girl, you're in my wheelhouse, I got to tell you. So welcome.
Thank you.
To the show. I'm so excited to talk with you. And just so our audience knows, you've been snowed and iced in. You're lucky to be here.
I really am. I had no internet access until this morning. And anyone who has been watching television, I live in the Atlanta area, knows that we've been going through a lot. So I was got a little bit panicked this morning because I thought, I've got to talk to Denise, and I was so excited about it. And so I'm just glad we made it and converged at the same time.
Oh, you and me both. I was, emailing you. I was emailing your assistant. I was saying, okay, I've got an hour. What am I going to do?
I was prepared to reschedule you.
So, but I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you for your patience.
Oh, well, it is what it is. It's a God-made event. It's nothing that we can do anything about. We've all had kind of weather events. Like I was telling you, I live in the very deep south. I mean, I'm just, as the crow flies, about, 15 miles from the Gulf. But what people don't understand is when we get snow events or ice events, because the air is so wet, we have so much humidity, it's cold. And it goes clean to the bone and, bridges ice over and, things can't be brought in. And for us, it's kind of a big deal because we don't know what to do with it.
Oh, bless your heart. Yeah, and what I'm hearing you say and what it sounds like is just a small amount of that sort of paralyzes your area.
It does. And I have the distinction of living in the state, the one out of 50 states, that has been nominated or proven to be number one in the world's worst drivers, or the United States worst drivers.
Oh, that's funny.
I know. It is. So I know better than to get out among them. When there's something like that.
Isn't that funny? What have you learned, though, because now that you're in that kind of a state, you've probably learned some tactics and some defensive driving that helps you.
Stay home.
What I'm hearing you say is that you just stay away most of the time when it's bad weather.
Yeah, I know to tap my brakes, and I know not to slam on my brakes or speed, but most people don't. So I just don't allow them to hit me. That's my, big thing. I just don't go out among it.
Good for you. That sounds very wise. You've probably figured out ways to just enjoy staying in for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm an introvert, so I don't have any problem with it at all.
Perfect. And you can just sit there and work on projects and read, and you probably actually fully present to it.
Oh, I loved it. I have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I wouldn't mind a little bit more. But that's enough about the weather, because everybody's experiencing it and people are listening.
Sure.
Look, we're cold. Just talk.
Give me something to hear.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Like I say, I've got your book. It's a good book. I recommend that people read it. But before I launch into all of the questions I've got for you, give our audience a little taste of who you are. Tell them who you are, what it is that you do, and where they can find you on the Internet.
Okay. Well, I'm in my 40s now, so for over 20 years, I've been working as a keynote speaker, a leadership and organizational development trainer, and an author, and of course, performing artist. I tell people it's one of those professions that you know early in your life what you're supposed to do, but you have to kind of grow into it. So really, I feel like where I'm at now is just a result of making a lot of mistakes and figuring this out the hard way. But basically, I started 20-some years ago doing keynote presentations first. That's how it sort of began. I have a background in the arts, and so I was able to do motivational presentations, and they were entertaining and whatnot. And then gradually, as I sort of got a bird's-eye view into corporations and colleges and churches and that tongue-tied sentence that you were saying earlier, I began to see what are the needs in terms of empowerment. What is keeping individuals and organizations from developing their leaders and their organization to have success? And so I began to form the seminars at that point, one by one. And I discovered, after working in the field for about, 10, 15 years, there was this common trend. And I would say that my work in some ways fell into that trend, to be honest, is people would go hear a great speaker. They would hire a leadership trainer or organizationalist to come and motivate their company or their church or whatever and give them tools for success.
They leave all pumped up, and then it just goes away like everything else does.
It goes away. And there were two reasons I found for that. The first reason was that they weren't giving them processes that they could use 10 years from now that would keep them strong. And the work was not meant to be permanent. It created this temporary high, and people felt better, but like you just said very well, 2 months later, everything was the same again. And I just couldn't live with that.
If you don't have the process, life gets in the way if you aren't presented with processes or systems or something that you can actually go, okay, I'm going to do step one, step two, step two, three, whatever it is that I'm going to do something instead of feel something. And there's a gulf between feeling and doing, isn't there?
Yes, that's right. Yes, you're absolutely right. And whatever you're given, you need to be able to use that. And if you keep using it, your vitality, creativity, productivity, and accountability are not only increased, but you're able to maintain those increased levels. And I found that I even wanted to do that in a keynote. You know, keynotes are primarily designed to kick off conferences and things, but I wanted to even give that to people in a keynote so that they would have those permanent paradigms and behaviors that they could sort of hold on to and practice that would create more of that sense of permanency. And so, as I aged, my work just got better because I just didn't quit. I didn't decide to go off and do something else. I stuck with this. And so I've beefed up the keynotes and the seminars for all environments now I'm proud of the fact that I believe they, with time and practice, give a permanent sense of empowerment that eventually affects the bottom line and affects labor costs and affects productivity for churches and humanitarian groups, but also, corporations. And so that's sort of been in the journey, is strengthening that. And then the book actually did not come along until I've been at this for over 20 years. And the reason is because it couldn't have happened before then. As I was out in the field and had enough experience, I started to see that I could create a great seminar for leaders and employees. I could do a keynote that gave people these permanent things they could do to permanently increase their empowerment. But if they had particular physical, emotional, and spiritual blocks within them, then the material I was giving or anybody else was giving at any seminar could not be fully absorbed and would have limited results. So the book gives you tools that lift those physical, emotional, and spiritual blocks. So for individuals, so once I wrote the book, I was able to give people the whole picture. A keynote would do that. The seminars would do that. And then they would have a book at these seminars. They could say, now individually, I'm going to go home and unblock. So everybody has the highest possible probability for permanent change. And so that was really exciting, and it just took time, Denise. It really did. It took time.
So it was just basically the book came of your need to create a lasting tool instead of having people get excited about the keynote, which people do, they should, if they're done properly, and they go home. But the glow wears off. It always does. And, you know, I've been there. I've done that. You know, you hear a great speaker, oh, I'm going to do that. But without tools, you don't do it. You go home and wash dishes. Or you go, you know, you pick up the kids. I mean, life gets in the way. So,
you know,
became a tool. Is that how that happened? It was kind of your handout, but in book form?
Sort of. I want to back up because I love the way you worded something, because it was perfect. And I'm going to borrow it now. Oh, no, it was good. It was perfect.
It happens on my radio shows. I say something off the top of my head and people go, oh, I'm borrowing that. Go right ahead. It's yours.
Yeah. No, I love it. In fact, I'm sitting here with a pen writing the word down because I thought, oh, gosh, you just captured it. You said they would go home and the glow was gone. I love that because it does feel like a glow. I'm going to change. My organization's going to change. This is really going to do it. And everybody's all excited. It's where the glow wears off. It's where the term flavor of the month comes from, because everybody says this is just, so I love it. That's exactly, you worded it beautifully. The glow wears off. And the book was written, you know, the keynotes were having lasting effect. You know, they're in a form of a one-woman play. The arts are involved in it. So people are really into it and remember the behaviors and the paradigms, I think, more than if it was in a lecture format. So they were working. And the leadership development seminars for all these places were working. It was working. But I dedicated my whole life to it, and it wasn't enough, because even though it was working, what I was seeing was that the individuals in these organizations, in the leaders, the employees, the church members, the nonprofit humanitarian folks I was working with, it was working, but there were limitations on how far it would work, because these individuals had physical, emotional, and spiritual blocks within them that were keeping the material from being. And I wanted these people to fly. I wanted them to soar. You know, I get very excited when I see someone like yourself who has a really successful radio show. It took risk to do that. It took an empowered woman to do that. And I wanted my clients and the people to have the best possible chance at permanent success, and I wanted them to not just go to my seminar and get that, but if they went to therapy, if they went to a transformational seminar, if they read a book, I wanted the material, because there's lots of good stuff out there written by lots of really good people.
Yeah.
I wanted all
that
to go in, and they could use it. So that's really the reason for the book, was I want the organizations to have it, the leaders to have it, but I want individuals to be totally unblocked. So when this stuff comes along in their life, they can step into it, absorb it, take it, and go.
Now, do you find, Rebecca, that people tend not to I have witnessed this. I've done it in my own life. I think we all do. to some degree, sometimes just momentarily because we catch ourselves, and sometimes it can be kind of a permanent thing, but we tend to just go, that looks hard, or that looks painful, or in my case, no, not going to do it. And then I have to step up and go, yeah, you can do it. And I have to, and I tell this to people I mentor all the time, examine the evidence, because we have a lot of, I think Mary Kay Ash said this, thinking. We have an awful lot of it going on in our heads. And if we don't take the time to examine the evidence and say, where's the block? You know, what's the boulder in the stream that's preventing the water from coming downstream? What's going on here? And I think a lot of people just don't have the tools or the, I don't know, the guts to do that maybe. And I hope that's not the case, but people don't seem to do it.
Well, I mean, by the way, I just perked up when you said Mary Kay, because I am mystified by what she has done for women. So I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah.
And really, really wanted women to soar. Just incredible. But what you said, I think, points, your words, you have your finger on the pulse. You're absolutely correct. We do see, it's kind of like my friend says, if they're not willing to look at these things, you want to turn around and go and look at everything they've done so far and say, how's that working for you? Because it's not creating the change. And I think what you pointed to really is a root in that most people don't take the time to examine that and step into the tool and do it, not because they don't want to, but because they're afraid. They're terrified because, we love, even if it's not the best for us, we love familiarity. And we love things to look the same. And our old brains that have been wired into us are designed for sameness. We just that feels secure. And so, what you just said is the reason that I wrote a facilitator's guide to go with my book, because I want people to team up when they do this, or put together a group at their business or their book club. Instead of reading a novel this quarter, let's actually change our lives and go through this together. Because when people begin to bump up against change and what will really take them to the next level, it's terribly frightening. And I've experienced that same fear. And so what I say, it's scary.
That's why people have mentorships and, coaches.
Right.
You just need sometimes to bounce ideas off. And look, I know you've done this. I do it all the time. I'm just smart enough to stand on the fence and argue both sides. I should have been an attorney. I mean, I can argue both sides and then flip, or in a politician, but I'm not dishonest, so that wouldn't work.
Right.
You can stand there and say, okay, I can do this. Oh, no, I can't do this. But if you're talking with somebody else, and all of a sudden, before they've even said the first word, you've almost experienced clarity because somebody else is listening. And
that's
now
right.
You have to be responsible.
That's right. And women throughout history... and let me back up here 1 second. You said if I did that, I'd have to be a politician. My sense of your work thus far, not knowing you, I think that, you probably could have been an attorney, but diplomacy, you probably should have been a diplomat because you're able to step back and see all sides, which is unusual.
Trust me. I have no tact at all.
So I'm thinking you probably could have done that diplomatic
My mother has told me all of my life, honey, if your mouth is going to get you in trouble, your feet can't lead you out of one day. And it's the God's honest truth. I have no filters.
Look how you're making your living.
True.
You're making your living with your mouth, so hey.
I know. Go figure.
I love it. I think it's great. I think there's – I think that women throughout history have been so wise and seen what's needed and sort of in many ways behind the scenes directed the world in some really powerful ways. And I think it's really, I love to hear those stories. But this is for men as well. Many times if you want to change, you're not in it with a big group of people. You know, it's very typical for one person to want to go to counseling and another person to not. Or they're in an oppressed minority situation where it's, you know, they just have limited resources to classes or other things. Or, you know, we all need another person to hear our voice and validate our change and support it. And so I tell people all the time, get the book, get the facilitator's guide, and do this with a group or a partner or three people, and make, you know, create your own board of permanent empowerment. And don't let each other go, and be with each other during this process, because it is, you hit it right on the head when you said people just don't want to. They'll hit right up next to it, and then they'll change their mind. And that's fear. That's just fear of the unknown.
And it's so easy to do. I catch myself doing it all the time. Listen, I'm an introvert. I live alone. I'm happy that way. I'm happiest all by myself. But I have a lot of discussions with myself. I have to. And one, and I bring that up because in your book you discuss the fact that you were, like me, so entrenched in the role of being independent and self-sufficient that you were often out of touch with the fact that you even needed those things at all. And it took me years to figure out that I wasn't nearly as independent as I thought I was. I mean, I am. I take care of my own self. You know, everything I own, I purchased, I've earned, I bought. But I still need to have feedback. I still need to have friends. I still need to have people slap me on the wrist and go, "What the world were you thinking, girl? Ow."
That's
Okay. Don't
That's
like it,
so,
but I have to have it. I have a business coach. You know, it's, you can't do everything on your own. Your brain just doesn't work that way.
That's right.
Even if you're an introvert, and I am.
Yeah. It's funny you don't come across that way, but that it's amazing
totally
how. Yeah. You don't come across that way. But I am. I learned very early in my 20s, my early 20s, I crashed and burned really early. I checked myself into a rehabilitation program for an eating disorder. That's what, it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because what happened during that time, it's the reason I do what I do now, is because it set me on a course of getting honest, positively critical feedback, and it changed my entire life. And I recognized in that program how desperately I needed other people to shine the flashlight on the areas where I was stuck. And what's happened is, over the 20-some years, I have collected around me now a group of people who are, quite honestly, not that impressed with me. Now, they love me. they love me. They support me. They're proud of me. But they are not so proud that they can't sit down and go, "You know what, when you said that like that, that could have hurt women," or, "You need to be careful in your personal relationships in this area." Blah. I mean, it has saved my existence, because without it, I would be lost, because I cannot see every flaw, every place that I point out in my book that people have, that I've seen people have blocks, I've had them in spades, and it has been through community.
Can you give us some for instances?
Oh gosh, it's so easy, because there's so many places I'm flawed, but I write about it in the first chapter. You know, I took on this role of enabler and caretaker. In my personal relationships, and what I talk about in the first chapter is, let's look at the roles we've taken on. Some of them sound very positive, to be a Christian or be a peacemaker or be a rebel or be a non-traditionalist. And these roles are fine, professor, intellectual, but often these roles give us so much gratification in the external world that we've abandoned the parts of ourselves that would balance out our personality and give us real fulfillment. We've sacrificed applause for fulfillment, and I mean pats on the back. And one of the clear areas that I've struggled with my entire life, and especially my 20s and 30s, is this role, several, of uplifter, which, of course, obviously I do that for a living, enabler and caretaker. I took on these roles, and what they did, they were so familiar, and I had been trained since a child to take on those roles, that they took the place of intimacy because I could play out this role, and I found all these people that let me play out those roles, and I got lots of pats on the back for that, and it felt very, very familiar.
Right.
But when I began to look at that real seriously and get honest about how much of my life was taken over with what I believed made me look valuable as opposed to authentic, I began to go, there's a critical thinker in there that's dying to come out, but because I don't want to displease people, I don't let her out of the closet. There's a person that wants to really be honest about a dark side and not always caretake and enable, but there's a part of me that wants to be an equal partner with people as opposed to getting my validation in this role. And I had also seen where my helping, you know, in good at church or, you know, humanitarian, it was still wrapped up in that role. And I thought, you know, I want to continue to do good, but I want to back off a little bit and see what my motivation might be of doing good. And is it my calling or is it to feel like I'm doing good? And so all this examination of all these roles and having that chipped away was very painful. It wasn't fun. In the middle of chipping away at a role and then actually breathing and doing some of the exercises I talk about in the book to get me back, who I really am, felt out of control. Emotions came up, but where I eventually ended back up was Rebecca. And it was calming. It was just calming to go back home to who I really am. And it was a lot less work. I wore myself out trying to be valuable and appreciated instead of being real.
I understand that. Now, and that leads me to my next question, which is boundaries.
Sure.
Because, look, I'm a great boundary setter, and I police my boundaries. People who don't even know me, I must have an invisible or visible boundary around me because I've got that 6-inch rule. You come into my airspace, I'll pop you one. That's just all there is
to
it. Don't do it. I don't like it. I don't want to be touched. Don't come near me in any kind of a manner where you haven't been invited. That's just, it's been my rule all my life.
Sure.
But a lot of people don't have boundaries and they don't police their boundaries, and I find that sad. Because who's going to take care of you but you? So that leads me to boundaries. So, you know, I'd love to hear what you've got to say about that.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. I'm blown away by your willingness to admit how things really are for you.
I don't want people close to me. I mean, I like people. Well, I do. I like people for 59 and three-quarter minutes. But after that, I need to go off and be by myself. Just don't touch me. Don't.
See, I love your
why people want to do that.
Yeah, I wish more hosts were so honest because what you're doing is giving people permission to be honest, and that's a breath of fresh air. So I appreciate that so much. It's really, really nice. It's relaxing on my end because I know you're just being who you are. I spend at the end at the end of the very first chapter, I spend several pages talking, warning people about how important it is going to be in this work that you set boundaries. And I give them the how-tos. I talk about this is what a good boundary would look like. For example, if someone in your family, see people, that's why they need other people to do this work with them. And that's why I say pull together a group at your nonprofit and sponsor this group. It's called, you know, because you're going to need it. Because when you begin to change, even sometimes the people that you love the most, it'll surprise you, will not be comfortable with that. They liked you you were.
Yeah.
They liked you the way you were.
Yeah.
So the two boundaries I talk about, yes, you were saying you're aware of that from your life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much.
So the two things I say, and I go into more detail in the book, but basically what I say in a nutshell is You have to communicate to them that you love them and that this has nothing to do with your love for them. Now, I'm talking about safe, good people in your life, not toxic people, mm-hmm. but familiar people that live with you, that are around you, that are seeing this. Just, you need to really express, look, this, you're going to see some changes, but I love you. I'm not going to leave you, that sort of thing, because they start to get scared. Right. And then I start, and then I have an entire chapter on standing in your power. How do you stand in your full power and live out your authentic greatness in the world? And a chapter in there is about beginning to minimize some of the time you spend in familiar relationships in order for you to have the time that you need to branch out into unfamiliar settings and unfamiliar relationships. So I spell out in that chapter, how that's done, and that there's going to have to be some communication, and that sometimes that works and people understand. Sometimes they get angry, which means you need your partner. You need to go, because sometimes that anger comes in the form of shame. These are good people doing this often. Good people. It's like when some people begin to lose weight, and there's people in their family that are loving people, but they'll shame them for that. They'll make happens in minorities whenever they start to step out of their minority situation. The people around it gets very uncomfortable. So I spend a lot of time at the beginning of the book and dedicate an entire two sections of the standing of your power to, how do you begin to set boundaries and branch out into the unfamiliar with the people around you? Because if you don't have those, you're not going to make it through this work, because the pull to the familiar for all of us, as you pointed out so beautifully a while ago, is really strong. It's really strong.
Well, it's a habit. It's almost like this huge cable that runs down the middle of our, the two hemispheres of our brain that says, stay on this path.
Yes.
I can almost visualize it.
I think it's wired into
deliberately.
Us. Yes. You do what, deliberately?
I run off that cable all the time because I think in pictures, so I tend to speak in pictures. And I literally and I know that the two hemispheres are not connected. I know that logically. But I also see the superhighway running down the middle of them. It's the only way I can kind of describe it. And I see myself frequently traveling down that stupid superhighway, and I will go, stop, Denise, stop. Look left, look right, jump down. Get off of here. Do some different thinking, and I have to stop. Again, I'm always examining the evidence, always. But I've had to
I love that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, but it's just the way I've had to train myself so I don't fall back into easy patterns or comfortable patterns, because I'm an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs have cast iron stomachs. We like to pretend that we have cast iron stomachs. We don't. We fail all day. We make little mistakes. We make big mistakes. We fall down on the ground. We jump right back up. We come across a boulder. We look at it. We either blow it up, go around it, go under it. We get around it somehow. And that's just how we operate. So
absolutely.
As a result of being who I am, I have to not fall into, kind of preconceived notions, mine or other people's. So I'm always examining the evidence. And a lot of times, it's my own evidence. I'm like, where in the heck did you come up with that? Really, Denise? Okay, put that one away.
Wow. Yeah. I love your example of the cable. I think it's a great visual for visual people to see themselves on that cable, because it's a cable that we cling to if we're going to die if we let go.
Yeah, it's very wide. I mean, you can walk on it and not fall off if you don't want to. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
I'm always trying to ask the darn thing.
Wow. And what I also love is, and it's really, again, unusual, and I like the way you said it, is when you said you will look at a thought or something, if I heard you correctly, and you'll say, where did you get that? Where did that come from? Because I love the way you said that, because we really, I have in the chapter on standing in your power, I have first chapter about the core beliefs we have about ourselves, and then the second one is the core beliefs about how the world works. And we really believe the stories we've made up of how things are, and if we step out, this will happen. It's not safe. It's not. So the fact that you can
it's not
step
even real.
Back and
it's
see
not
it,
real.
It's illusory. Well,
it's illusory. That's exactly right. And, you know, I get very uncomfortable just kind of put it in the present right now. I finally just quit watching the news largely because it's the same old stuff every single day. You can turn on the news now or 10 years ago. Somebody's blowing somebody up. Somebody's getting murdered. These, I call them Dust Bowl countries just for lack of better description, are murdering each other, genocide. It goes on and on and on and on. And it doesn't seem to change. And it is way too easy for me in particular to go, really? I mean, these people are just nasty. That's not the truth.
Yeah.
They're people, and I have to stop myself from making these blanket, really ugly assumptions about people I've never met and go, no, they're people too. They are experiencing dread and fear and hopefulness and hopelessness and all of the things that we go through every day. Don't judge them. And I struggle with that, I'll be honest with you, because it's just too easy to go, crud, and walk off.
Yeah. Well, what I love about what you're saying and what I'm hearing from your expression, and it's beautifully expressed, is that you have learned when you're watching this coverage, when you're watching these things, how easily you can get sucked in to the drama of it. And,
and
you recognize, I've got to turn this off and get myself back.
Yeah, it's insane because it doesn't ever change. Somebody told me a story, and it stuck with me. It's just one of the, again, it's one of those goofy stories, and I have never watched soap operas in my life. I just don't watch much television. I'm not entertained by it. I read, I study. I don't like to watch TV. But there apparently, I think it was General Hospital. I think my mother told me this story. It was so funny, but apparently there was a nurse on General Hospital many, many, many years ago, and she was married to somebody named Link, and he got into some kind of car accident. He was in a coma. So my mother said that she watched the show, turned it off for about 10 months, a year perhaps, and she said the last thing she saw was this nurse, Jessie, leaning over the hospital bed saying, Link, can you hear me? Link, can you hear me? When she turned it on about a year later, Jessie is leaning over the hospital bed and says, Link, are you there? Can you hear me? Nothing had changed in a year. And it's a ridiculous story, but it just stuck with me. And that's how
I view it. It's perfect because it shows you how nothing had changed.
It's the same crap, different day, to be honest with
you. Isn't that interesting? Is it?
Yeah.
Well, it's true. And what you're speaking of, Denise, and again, you've sort of got your finger on the pulse of it, I think, is when I go and say give a keynote presentation or I do a seminar or someone gets the book, I say to them often, congratulations, because you're stepping outside of the matrix. Mm-hmm. And I watched it in Atlanta when this ice storm was going on, and we were all pretty dependent on the news coverage because we didn't know what was coming. We didn't know, but I watched the commentators that start to try to make a crisis and a problem out of something that wasn't even there. And the matrix, the world out there loves drama. They love illusions. They love all of that. When you change, like you recognized your story, when you start to do, for example, like I say, the work in the book, or they see a keynote, and I'll tell them, look, when you get back and you start doing this, find support because you're stepping out of the matrix, not letting yourself get all wrapped up in that drama, and you're doing very work that's going to help you be cleaner and cleaner and cleaner and less attracted to drama, less attracted to chaos, more attracted to high-functioning, critical-thinking people. And the problem with our society is we haven't done that kind of work. So we're not doing what you told me a while ago, which is stepping back and going, now, where did that come from? So television and the media, they can woo us because they're speaking our language. They're speaking. And drama is not the best, but it's familiar. But when
and
we begin to step
fun,
outside
but
of that,
you can't live it.
Yeah,
sometimes you go, oh, that was fun, but, I'm done. I have to go back and do my dishes now. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. And all of the, even the excitement of temporary change is still that same matrix as the excitement of drama, mm-hmm. you know, and of the things you're talking about. It takes us away from the authentic path of cleaning up our unfinished business, unblocking ourselves physically, emotionally, and spiritually so we can step into our greatness and we can see manipulation coming. We're clean, you know, and that's the planet I envision is people that are doing what you did while ago more. They're stepping back going, mm-hmm. now where did that come from? Because that's not real.
And that's exactly true. And I love that you said that. Because, you know, do you know who Bob Berg is?
No, I don't.
Bob Berg wrote, he's an author and speaker. He wrote The Go-Giver and Go-Giver Sell More, and he's got a new book out. He's a great author. I'm surprised you haven't come across him on the speaker circuit.
I'm going to write that down.
I think you'd really like Bob Berg.
Yeah.
But I was talking with him. He was on my radio show a couple of weeks ago, and you know, we always just kind of wander off into paths that we didn't mean to go on. And you know, you're talking about old beliefs. Like, I hate doing laundry, and I, for the life of me, I mean, think about it. It's super easy. I gather up the laundry, I sort it, I put it in the washing machine, I dump in the chemicals, and I walk off. How difficult is that? I unload it, I put it in the dryer, I dry it, then I fold it. You know, you're talking, you know, not counting, you know, the time while these things are happening, while it's washing, while it's drying. You're talking 15 minutes max. So why do I detest doing laundry? And it occurred to me it's because when I was a kid, and I don't know where this memory came from, but it's an old, old memory that I had just forgotten about, that our laundry would just get stacked up. I was the oldest of a whole mess of kids. We had a lot of laundry. And it would just get stacked up and stacked up and stacked up, and it would get damp, and then it would stink, and then it would have mold. And well, yeah, I hate doing laundry. I mean, I was taught as a kid that laundry's icky. So
right.
I had to really stand back. Every time I walk past my laundry room, you know what I do? It's the craziest thing, but it's working. I'll walk by, and I'll stop, and I'll look at my you know, very cool washer, my very cool dryer. Hey, how you doing? And I chat with them. If anybody lived with me, they'd think I was a blooming idiot.
Oh, that's funny.
What? It's working.
I love it.
You know, I'm chatting with them going, you know what? I'm so glad you're here. I'm glad I don't have to go to a laundromat. I'm glad
wow,
I don't have
that's...
to let my laundry stack up. So I'm reinforcing what I'm replacing that old icky memory is what I'm doing.
Wow. Yeah.
With a new habit.
I love that. I love that. And I love that you recognized it. You know, one of the things
well,
that
took
I find.
A long time.
Oh, it does. And hence, that's the reason that I wrote the book the way that I did, was in these little bitty chip away
yeah.
at that memory, chip away at that conditioning, chip away at that role, chip away at that belief, chip away mm-hmm. at that physical toxicity, chip away, chip away, chip away, chip away. That's
right.
how we create a clearing for authentic living where we step into our greatness and we are not manipulated by the media or by anyone else. We can clearly stand for ourselves and stand in our power. And it's through doing the kind of thing you just did with your laundry and with all of that in bites and in layers. Because that's mm-hmm. gone for you now. It doesn't mean you're not going to be afraid again or have those feelings again, but the mm-hmm. intensity is going to diminish and get littler and
yeah.
littler. And you know, the book's called Awakening. You had a mini awakening that unlocked part of your ultimate potential because you had that. Very powerful because it seemed small, but that unblocked you in a way that allowed you to move through life with a better energy and a better capacity mm-hmm. to expand.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a small thing, but for me, it really was a big thing. Look, I'm a high-functioning workaholic. I like my space very clean. I'm almost anal-retentive about it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people just know when they come to my house, it's going to be immaculate, no matter what's going on. Laundry has always just bugged the bejeebers out of me. And it didn't fit in with my preconceived notion of being this high-functioning work. So there was that layer. And once I thought, hang on a second, and I stood back and examined why I detested it so much. You notice that's in the past tense because I don't anymore. I'm getting
right.
much better about it. And I went, hang on a second. What, why am I just, what is going on here? Nothing else bothers me. Laundry just floors me for some reason. And once that memory just kind of, I guess once I allowed it to well up, I went, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Well, darn.
I'm always amazed when people talk about, yeah, well, isn't that funny how it welled up? When you let it welled up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was looking for it, but not consciously. I was like, hey, what in the world is going on here? This is not logical.
And
I'm very logical. So once I figured out it was that smelly, stinky garage with all that smelly, stinky laundry, I went, let's fix it.
Yes. Well, and I love that story, and I think that's why people, you know, your path is one of you are going to do this work anyway. Mm-hmm. You're going to find it.
Well, I question everything. I even question myself. Because, you know, I'm thinking things that really sometimes don't make sense, so I have to examine the evidence. I have to.
Sure. Well, and I think that is that's your path. That's why you have your show. It's why you're making such a big difference. But I also think that's why a lot of people need simple tools that will help them to have a moment like what you had. Because we can hear let go. We can hear surrender. We can hear step into your greatness.
Right.
Have confidence. Believe in yourself. We can hear all those things. But what you just expressed is in the background every time we hear those motivational sayings, and it's running the show. And it's running the show. And that's why people need tools so that they can intentionally create what you had happen with you about the laundry. Because that is no small thing. That's a big, big breakthrough. And I'm always amazed how, you know, just an example, and I put it in the book of someone who wasn't able to step into their greatness, and their parents were wonderful people. They had had a great upbringing. You know, they made mistakes, but overall it was loving. Their mom just forgot one day to pick them up from school. You know how mom or dad will be coordinating and they'll think it's their day and it's not their day. Well, that particular person made that mean that they were easy to forget.
Well,
I mean, and nobody did anything on purpose, but it was that small.
Right.
When they got in touch with that, you know, and all of a sudden they were worthy to be remembered. When what is running the show of your life is I'm easy to forget, then you keep creating situations where you're forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, and so the example you gave of the laundry, that was embedded from years ago, which created a way of being for you, which kept repeating itself. So I think people need those tools to give help their physical, emotional, and spiritual self create space for those things to bubble up so that it's intentional and it's done in a layered form so they can really fly. And I think your story is a perfect example of how that can happen with something that looks so small, but in your world, that was big. That was big.
Well, it was annoying. It was just this constant, you know, thorn in my side. It's like, really? Why don't I want to do this? It's so easy. Technology over time has made it so easy. You know, I'm not like my grandmother. I don't have to put it out on the line and hope that it's not going to rain.
Right.
I mean, technology is so great. It's 15 minutes, start to finish, when you take aside, you know, the processing time, what is the problem here?
Yeah.
And I finally just got a belly full of it and stood back and went, let's do this, figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and I tell people, I love your story because I tell people all the time, if you'll just take the behaviors and the paradigms and the tools that you see and the keynotes and the seminars and the book and you just keep doing it, what's going to happen is they're going to have breakthroughs like what you had on a consistent basis. Sometimes people have these humongous breakthroughs, but normally it's a process of taking this tool, priming your physical, emotional, you know, doing it at your organization or taking it and doing it. And they have these little layers, and each time one of those layers is gone, like what happened with you with the laundry, what results is freedom. There's an opening to step into who you're meant to be, mm-hmm. which gives you authentic energy as opposed to trying to get motivated.
Right.
They're very, very different. What happened with you after you had that breakthrough is that you had authentic energy. You didn't even, you could have said motivational things all the way to the laundry and back.
Doesn't work.
But when you took that layer off, you didn't even need motivational sayings. Mm-mm. There was a natural way of being that occurred for you that gave you, it was authentic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just you being you instead of being run by something.
Right. And not only that,
Very empowering. I got that
thorn out of the way, and now I'm like, hey, dryer, hey, washer, you're looking cute today. I mean, I do silly things. And
but silliness is a natural result of authentic living. Because when all that weight, when all the physical, emotional, and spiritual weight is off of you, there is a natural giggliness and adventure that starts to occur. It's very exciting.
It really is.
Very
and not
exciting.
Only that, now I've opened up the universe, so to speak, to, you know, more good things. So my thought process has always been the more you struggle, the more you fight against something, the more you just invite that back into your life. So when
what you resist persists.
That's exactly right. So now I don't have that resistance going on, so it's very easy for me to go from the laundry room out to the garage. You know, now I've got this whole other, you know, kind of bouncy energy going on because I'm not going, God darn it,
bouncy's a good
dragging
word.
Dragging my feet, It's a silly thing, but it's working. So do you have any particular steps that you like people to kind of walk through? And this is a really important question I've been wanting to ask you. Change takes practice. Change takes dedication.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really, I don't know about you, I set aside time to really work on myself, and I do it when I'm first waking up, and I do it again before I go to sleep. You know, this is my, even though I'm alone all of the time, I have my quiet time, which is just me and my navel, so to speak. I'm talking to my subconscious. I'm saying, okay, this is what I want to happen. These are the questions that I have. And I go very deep inside twice a day at least, and it's a habit. It's like prayer for me.
Yeah. And so your question is, what is my recommendation for application of tools and things like that?
Okay. I mean, how do you get people to take the time, I think, because a lot of people are going to say, I just don't have time. And they do have time.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword now because I've been doing this so long, and when people see a keynote, now I do it. It's very layered with lots of behaviors and paradigms mm-hmm. that people can do in the workplace. They can do at their church. They can do at their nonprofit. They can do at their college or university. They can do in their classroom. I mean, it depends on the mm-hmm. environment. And so, you know, I try to do the keynote, and I also have a debriefing session where we go back and we unpack it, and I say, now, this monologue, you saw this and this and this and sort of. And so, in the book, you know, and the leaders, the tools and the leadership seminars, those are 2 and 3 days often for a group.
Okay.
You know, and the book, of course, can be a lifetime. So what I tell people is take one of those behaviors. For example, if I'm doing something at a school for teachers that are going to take back in their classroom or a university, they're going to take it, or a corporation or a nonprofit, everywhere, a church, our mm-hmm. spiritual conference, I will say, let's unpack this. They get it all written down. They're good to go. And I say, take one of these and just break it down however you want to break it down. As a group, we're all going to put into practice one. As a leadership team, when we go back and we start to lead our nonprofit or lead our university, we're going to do this one. And then we're going to debrief at our meetings and work through. In other words, it's okay if you go really, 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 really slow and you take one of those and you practice it once a day, twice a day. Mm-hmm. I tell people to laminate whatever you're doing for that month and put it on your desk and look at it, refer to it. But I just tell them to breathe and laugh through it. Sometimes change is really tough. People are going to kick up dust a lot of times. To get to the other side, sometimes you have to go through a very uncomfortable period. Relax with it, have fun with it, support each other, and go slow. But be regular and be consistent. If you're going to do it, make sure at least once a day you're intentionally looking at whatever you pulled out of that keynote or out of that seminar or out of that book, and you're putting it into practice and you're getting support. But but the key is adventure and fun and relax, because you're stepping out of the matrix. You're against.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Very exciting.
It is.
Scary often.
Yeah.
Painful.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Sometimes not. But enjoy it.
I agree. You know what? I'm going to give you a hint of some of the things that I do. I set a lot of intentions. I don't worry about goals so much as I set intentions. They're very different things for me. But what I do is I take a whiteboard marker, and whatever my big intention is for that day, that month, that week, whatever it is that really requires my concentration, I write it on my mirrors all over the house. So wherever I'm at in the house, so I'm in the bathrooms or the living room or my little, I don't have hallways, it's open concept, but you've got mirrors all over the place. Some are antique, some are not. And in big green letters, I don't use red because red is stop. I use green for go. My intention is right there, and I spot it whatever room I'm in, and it just reinforces.
Good for you. Good for you. That's a great.
It seems to work.
I think so. I've actually had, when I've gone and done things for larger organizations, they will actually decide what it is, their intentional tool for the quarter that they took, and everybody laminates it, and they actually put it on their computer. You know, because that way they come in the morning, everybody's on the same page. It sets an intention for the entire company. And what they're working towards is permanent empowerment for the organization and for individuals to, you know, what my work does, the symptomology of it is that it's not a top-down. It's a drawing out. It's how do you draw out the greatness of everybody around you so they're stepping up. And stepping into who they are, and their production levels are soaring, so that it's a partnership rather than an authoritarian kind of thing. So I tell them, this is exciting. You are changing, and that is not the culture of the Western world. The culture of the Western world is take this pill, do this process, impose it on people, and everything will change. My work is inverted. And it's human development to the point that people rise to the occasion. It's what I think we ought to be doing with other countries in our relationships internationally is that. So I say all that to say that the intentionality of making sure that everybody's on the same page each quarter, you're intentional, you have it in front of you, but also be intentional with adventure and how exciting this is. Because you're going against an entire culture to really rise up and be different. And be permanently empowered and lead the way. You're leaders in this human development movement that I think has to happen on a planetary basis for us to have good relationships with all people in all countries. So it's exciting.
Right.
So when you set your intentionality for the tool, set your intentionality that this is invigorating and that we are becoming authentically energized leaders in our personal and professional lives. And I think that intentionality creates an energy that's very exciting.
Right. You know what I'm hearing from this? That you want us to lead by example, not exhortation.
I think it's the only way to change our planet. We have fed into the matrix. We've allowed governments, and I don't think all our government's bad. I think we've got a lot of good people in place as well. But we've been sold things. And the only way to really, really change the energy of the planet is to look within, become the best leader you can, clean out your physical, emotional, and spiritual garbage, step into your greatness, and forge a way for the next generation, and partner with people and partner with other countries as opposed to buying into something that is about control or is about sameness. I think Gandhi had it right when he said, be the change you want to see in the world.
Absolutely. My grandmother, who was a very wise woman, I thought she was simple. You know, when I was a kid, you were all arrogant and were like, really, Grandma? Seriously? She would say, and this was, she said this over and over again, and I would just look at her and, you know, I had a concussion from rolling my eyes. Turns out she was absolutely right, and I was a little punk. But she would say, you are what you eat, and you are what you think. Well, yeah.
Your grandmother You are so lucky to have that example, Denise. You are so, so blessed.
I didn't recognize it at the time, but I apologize to her. She's gone now, has been for a long time. I send up a little apology to her every day for my sheer arrogance.
Yeah, but you got it.
So right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You are carrying on. You are carrying on your grandmother's legacy right now.
So I never thought of it like that. Yeah. But
oh, yeah.
She was so right, and she would tell me one time, and I'll never forget this either. She said, "Do you want to know somebody's character by looking at them?" And I said, "Well, yeah." She said, "Look at somebody's face in repose. If in repose, when they're not animated, they're not smiling, you don't really see their eyes, they're looking down, if their mouth is turned down and there are deep lines of discontent on their face," she said, "run." Got it. Understood.
Your mother is very...
And again, she was right.
Your grandmother was right. Because when you start to step in your full power, I see it all the time, in your authentic energy, and people frown, that's your signal to go find other people who want to wake up from the inside out and step into their greatness. Look, your grandmother's story has touched me because she was trying to tell you, she was trying to tell you, and what you've just told probably thousands of people, so see, your grandma's still alive here, is when you see that, run and move towards people who want to have an awakening. You know, that's why I call my book Awakening, because, you know, that's who you want to be around. That's what's going to change your planet. Grandmother was wise. She left you a wonderful, wonderful message.
I think so, too. And I'm very careful as a result of that of who I'm willing to spend time with.
Good.
And I choose my friends very wisely.
Good.
And I think,
sameness,
you know,
is rampant.
I know. Yeah. It's scary.
Sameness is rampant. And drama, gossip, the tabloids make a lot of money because there's a lot of people that feel inadequate, do not want to do the work that we're talking about in their organizations and in their lives. They want to stay around the sameness. So when they view someone that they think has achieved something, their inadequacy takes over and they begin to find flaws in those people, gossip about them, and start drama. That's not what you want. You want to be around people who want to be clean of their baggage and go into these organizations and change. I believe that can change the world.
I think you're right. I agree with you completely, because when you're around people like that, you're not walking around hunched over, so to speak, fending off the next blow, whatever the next blow is going to be.
Right. You're partnering. It's as I was saying, the symptomology of the work I present in the keynotes and then the leadership seminars in the book is it inverts this idea of motivation from one of, if you'll do this, everybody will be motivated, to if you will create this environment within yourself, in your relationships, in your organizations, people will begin to rise up and own their greatness. So everybody's winning. Everybody's
Zappos
winning.
Zappos did that. You know, did you ever read the Zappos CEO, the book that he wrote about how he created Zappos?
I did not. Tell me about that.
Oh, well, Zappos is online shoes. I mean, it started out, some years ago. Tiny, tiny little thing. You know, they would just ship shoes. But let me tell you, they're kind of like Amazon right now. If you want to know anything about shoes or bags, you go to Zappos. I mean, that's just how there is.
Absolutely, you sure do. They're everywhere.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I started buying shoes online from them years ago, and I'm still a customer because I love their customer service, but I really love their corporate environment.
Yeah. There's places that get it. I did something for a medical practice not too long ago, and they got it. And it was, I could tell by the energy when I walked in that this is a place that wants their people to be permanently empowered and lead. They are not a top-down, dictatorial kind of, you know, and even places that are nice to people can still be top-down, you know, and come in and do this and this and this and this and this, don't question, and, you know, those sorts of things. It's a societal issue. It's the way we go into other countries when we try to decide for them what they need and how we're going to police this and how we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And it's why they look at us sometimes and go, you know, just partner with us. You know, if I did not believe that this mission I'm on and that you are on, Denise, was not global, I don't think I'd keep doing it, because we have to do it locally. And then it, you know, I call it an awakening movement on my website. It has a ripple effect because people across the globe need to awaken in this way, and our planet will be different. It will be different because we'll be partnering with people and collaborating and negotiating in ways that are collectively happening. It's very, very powerful. So your little awakening with the laundry and then your little, you know, stepping back and going, why did I say that? That doesn't even make sense. Those are powerful, powerful shifts. And if people are doing that in droves and having those shifts, the planet's different. And our organizations really, really change. And what's exciting about that is what it ultimately affects is the bottom line.
Oh, no kidding.
It affects
because profitability. Because if you brought enough people into, and I handle a team of about 32 virtual assistants, web developers. You've got a large team.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. I'm herding goldfish all day long. But
that's cute.
You know, I'm like, come over here. But the thing is, I never give them just a little. Some of them are just doing small tasks, but they understand what the bigger picture is, and I want them to understand what their role in it is, because if they understand where I'm going with this particular project, oftentimes they feel very empowered, I guess, to say, you know, Denise, what do you think about this idea? Have you thought about this? Well, no, I hadn't. Thank you very much. If I were to just piecemeal it out and say, okay, you do this, do it my way, and I don't want any further input, I would be struggling all day long. I want them to consult with me. They have skills that, you know, look, I don't ask anybody on my team to do something I can't personally do. I'm very techie, but they also have picked up skills and nuances that I may not have. I want to hear from them.
I love the way that you're doing it collectively, because they feel that and know it. And when I do the keynotes and also the seminars, I give people just small tool after small tool after small tool after, that if they'll keep doing it, what it is actually shifting is it's giving the people organization-wide, whether it's a nonprofit or a college or a church or kind of whatever, the ability for all of the employees to get more and more and more and more and more of a picture of the big picture. So they own it. They start to own it.
They own it. They get excited, and they come up with ideas. I mean, you can't work in a vacuum.
And labor cost, turnover in places that don't have that philosophy, it's like a water balloon with holes in it. It's just the profits is leaking out. There is a direct link between that kind of culture and productivity and profit margins, a direct link.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you know we are out of time? We quit streaming about, I know, we quit streaming about 6 or 7 minutes ago, 7 minutes ago.
Wow.
But we're still recording, so
okay.
Anybody who looks for us and wants to download it or looks for us in iTunes can find it. Rebecca, thank you. I mean, this has been fascinating.
You know, I want to tell you thank you for your authenticity and your genuineness and your willingness to really share the truth with people about you. I am so grateful to have had that from you, and I genuinely mean that. It is one of the least slick presentation/interviews I've probably ever had because of that. And it made me relaxed. And and I appreciate it.
Like I
it.
Told
you
in the green room, we just chat. You know, we just chat about whatever comes to mind. And, you know, I find makes a much better interview, and people get you being, you know, the guest. They go, okay, now I want to go find out more about Rebecca, and I want to see what she's talking about. And, you know, hopefully people will go visit you, and I hope they'll say, hey, Denise sent me. But if not, it doesn't matter. I hope they go visit you.
Now, let me ask you, now that we're sort of at the end, because these are logistics, but I want to look it up too. I'm assuming that I just go to the blog talk, go to your site, and then I'm assuming you do what these other folks do. You archive this so people can listen to it. Okay.
Yeah. The link
and,
I sent you in the email.
It sounds like your listenership is great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You sound like you're getting
good
listeners.
Audience. Well, you know, it's the funniest thing, and I've told this story before, but I got an email some time ago, a year or so ago, from a gentleman who is a soldier in the UK. And he said, listen, I'm often deployed to Afghanistan, and every time I come back to the UK, I load your show into my iPod. And I went, oh, my gosh.
That's so moving.
You just never know who's listening.
You never know.
So, yeah, to that gentleman.
You never know.
Thank you for your service. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
that's
Rebecca,
very touching.
It is, and you know, it was so sweet of him to just send me a note out of the blue. But thank you so much for being with me here today.
Absolutely.
You have shared a great deal of valuable information with our audience, and I know they appreciate it as much as I do. And I'm so glad I got to meet you.
I feel like it's a gift. I do not believe anything's an accident. So even the stupid ice storm and even the fact that I feel bad that I didn't get to send you what you needed early enough and all those things, it's still the perfect time for it to be. And
I have your book.
I'm always amazed at how everybody gets what they need. It's not about one person. It is about a collective greater good. So both of us benefited. And I'm so grateful for that. It was a blessing
so glad
for me.
Here. Oh, thank you. Same. I feel the same way. Well, listen, to our audience, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Rebecca Carpenter. And I will see you next week. Rebecca, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. You have a great rest of the week.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.